back. WUNST, Towson, Baltimore, and Baltimore Positive. I'm wearing my State Fair shirt. We are looking forward to get back over to Catonsville in the 21228. I saw that Don has his chair out already for the 4th of July celebrations and festivities over there. Hot dog eating contest, cold beer, all of that and more. Our friends at State Fair and our friends at El Guapo. I have not had a margarita at El Guapo yet. I'm vaccinated. I'm mask-free. This might be the week. This might be the week to get over there. Luke Jones joins us now. I know this is the week to get out to Owings Mills. Luke, I have been a stranger to all things purple. I'd like to say I'm estranged from the organization. I have no idea at this point. I'm trying to think of the last time we had a Raven player on the show, a Raven coach on the show, or a Raven anything on the show, or the last time I saw Raven, although I was in the room with Jimmy Smith the other day at Chaucer. Jameel McLean bought me a drink. So hey, I walk around the city and I run into Ravens. I just have not been to Owings Mills lately. This is the big week, right? This is the big one, as Red Fox would say.
Big for this time of year, right? I mean, you have the OTAs, which are voluntary. I mean, there was so much discussion, NFLPA putting out statements from various players from various teams saying they weren't going to show up, and it really amounted to much ado about nothing. You know, the typical veterans who you thought might stay away tended to be the ones who would stay away. You know, I even thought, you know, Mark Andrews entering contract year, he wasn't there for the first week of OTAs, but he's been there the last 2 weeks of OTAs. But we get to mandatory minicamp week, and you know, we'll see what it looks like. It's supposed to be a Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday deal. We've seen some teams around the league actually cancel mandatory minicamp. So probably a reminder in the big picture sense that nothing that's happening this week is going to define the season, short of you get that small possibility of a player going down with a serious injury, which we know can happen. We remember Tavon Young. We remember Dennis Pitta, the final and, you know, career-ending hip injury this time of year, you know, 4 years ago, I guess it was. But you know, I think mandatory minicamp week is fun. You start the spring with, you know, your workouts that we're not really privy to, that where they're just lifting weights, doing a little bit of stuff on the field. They have rookie camp right after the draft, so you get to see Rashad Bateman, Adafe Owe, Dalen Hayes. You know, you see all the rookies, you see what the rookie free agents look like, who might be the diamond in the rough, and then you take a step up, right? You have the voluntary OTAs where, you know, the Ravens of their 90-man, you know, their 90-man roster, they've had, you know, roughly 70 guys out on the field, 68 guys out on the field. And keep in mind, there's a number of guys rehabbing, you know, Ronnie Stanley, Nick Boyle, guys that have been around rehabbing, but they're not going to be taking part because they're not 100% yet. So, you know, it's been very few players who we haven't seen during OTAs, Calais Campbell, Brandon Williams, Derek Wolfe. And let's face it, guys at their stage of their career where defensive linemen in their 30s, there's not a whole lot they're getting out of the first few weeks of voluntary OTAs, but mandatory minicamp is when, as far as all the players that are healthy and under contract, there's no franchise tag situation for the Ravens this year. You know, you see what it looks like, and you see those guys out there. You hope there are no Michael Pierce situations like a few years back when he showed up looking rather large, even for his standards, to the point where John Harbaugh pulled him off the field. So as long as you don't have a situation like that, I wouldn't anticipate any surprise holdout situation. You know, like I said, you know, Mark Andrews has even been there for OTA, so you know, no reason to think he won't be out there for mandatory minicamp. And he's kind of that head of the class of their pending free agents. So, you know, I don't expect an overly eventful week, and you hope that it's not an eventful week, because usually that means someone of significance goes down with a major injury that's going to impact the season. But it is a nice time to get a look at what your whole team looks like, at least most of it, you know, not counting the handful of guys that you're still counting on to be full strength by training camp. So there'll be some guys like that won't be out there, but you do get that idea of what it looks like. And it'll be nice to see what Rashad Bateman looks like going up against Marcus Peters, for example. It'll be nice to see just what those veteran defensive linemen that I mentioned, how are they looking? How are they moving around?
Hate each other by the second week of August.
Oh, no question about it. No question about it. So in that way, I think they're, even for the vets, And I'm sure, and you know, Marshall Yanda would tell you now, a couple years into retirement, if you told him how he felt about coming in on mandatory minicamp week, he'd probably roll his eyes and grunt and say, I didn't need that. I didn't need that junk. But I think for the vets that haven't been around, even for those guys, nice to get out there and survey the scene a little bit, see what the rookies look like. And you know, you get a little idea of, you know, kind of summing up where all those younger players are going up against all the vets. And you know, it's your last chance to get a look at these guys before you get to late July and they're buckling it up for real and really starting to hone in on getting ready for the start of the season.
He is Luke Jones. He is Baltimore Luke. He'll be the field side. I don't know. What do you want to call it? Shade side, hopefully, if, you know, for this round of all of this. As someone who actually sits out and watches it, right? Like if fans could come, they would line up and park early and water off. What do you see when you're out there in a couple of days this week?
I mean, I think a lot of times, and this really applies for the rookies, as I mentioned, there's that progression. You have rookie camp where, you know, someone like me who doesn't have some kind of expert football X's and O's savant kind of eyes or mind for the game, but I've seen what it looks like, right? You see what rookie camp looks like. It's really disjointed. Guys don't know where to line up. Coaches are coaching them up between every single play. And then you see the next step, and that's OTAs. And now we'll see another step with mandatory minicamp. You'll have all the healthy vets out there running around at least a little bit. So, you know, the speed of it, you're looking how that looks. I think when you look at as far as some of the question marks for this team, we've talked at length about wide receiver. You know, you're not getting a full picture just yet with that because we know that there's no contact. There's no threat of contact that many young wide receivers struggle with that. You know, you can catch balls in helmets and shorts and you know you're not going to get lit up going over the middle. But you know that there are steps where that's going to come. Certainly comes starting during training camp. But, you know, I am interested to see, you know, how these young guys at the edge, you know, the edge defender spots, we've talked about outside linebacker a lot to this point, despite talk of Justin Houston and, you know, some of the other names that have been out there, the Ravens have abstained from adding that veteran. Now, do I think that could still come between now and the start of the season? Yeah, I absolutely think that's a possibility. And if you look at them from a cap standpoint, they have the ability to create some more room if they would need to, with some restructuring here and there. Not that you want to do that, but they certainly could without too much of a consequence when you look at the candidates that they could do that with. But right now, you know, going into this week of mandatory minicamp, they've got about $10.5 million of cap space. Now, they'll need cap space for, you know, they have a couple draft picks left to sign. They've signed Owe at the end of last week. And no drama there, but you have that rookie pool. Keep in mind, rule of 51 right now, it's only your top 51 cap numbers that count for the salary cap. You do need money once you get to the end of the preseason, going into the regular season. All of your practice squad guys count against the cap. All of your IR guys count against the cap. So in other words, you need that rainy day fund. So they're kind of in a good position there. I think they have a little bit of flexibility. They could create a little bit more. So my point is, do they have the wherewithal, the cap flexibility, the financial flexibility to make another small to moderate kind of short-term signing? Yeah, there's no question about that. In fact, you know, last week we haven't had a chance to talk about this, but Gus Edwards, they actually lowered his 2021 cap number by a smidge, with doing that. They signed Juwan James, of course, the right tackle that we've mentioned in some of our discussions about the whole OTA thing. He's the Denver right tackle who tore his Achilles away from the facility. Denver puts him on the non-football injury list. They don't want to pay him. There's a grievance. We'll see how that looks. Ravens sign him for 2022. He's going to rehab. They essentially pay him a $500,000 signing bonus to get a 2022 team option. John Harbaugh talked a little bit about maybe he could play at the end of the year. I'd be shocked by that. You're talking about a guy who's played three games since 2019, but hey, a long-term investment there potentially with very little risk. So they have, you know, we'll continue to talk about the possibility. I mean, Todd Gurley came in for a visit at the end of last week. That would have been a really exciting move 4 years ago when he was one of the best running backs in football. But I think we've seen that narrative and his knee shot or is not at all what it was a few years ago. So, you know, I think by all accounts, it sounded like it was a good visit. I think there's some interest there, but what is his salary expectation what is his workload expectation relative to the fact that the Ravens already have J.K. Dobbins, Gus Edwards, and oh yeah, a guy by the name of Lamar Jackson who runs the ball quite a bit. So there are only so many carries to go around. So we'll see if anything comes of that. There was nothing imminent as going into the weekend, but you know, you're trying to get a look at, you know, how some of these young guys look. And even as I wrote at BaltimorePositive.com, there's someone like Patrick Queen who started every game last year, played a lot, looked really good and promising at times, made splash plays, but we can also remember some games where his performance was pretty forgettable. And he kind of talked about the fact that he didn't have that springtime last year. None of those rookies did a year ago. From a conditioning standpoint, from a learning standpoint, from a structure standpoint, you go from this structured, every hour of every week is laid out for you in college, whether you're lifting, study hall, class, games, practice, to now being in this situation, especially in a pandemic where you're not allowed to be in the building. You're having Zooms. You haven't met anyone. You don't know where the cafeteria is. You don't know where the training room is. And then you show up in July and it's training camp. So he flat out said that was tough for him. And he said he wasn't in good football shape. And he felt like he didn't really find his stride, even just from a physical standpoint, let alone the mental side, until October. Now, is that the entire reason why he was up and down last year? No, probably not, but it's part of it. So even those young guys that aren't rookies, but they get an opportunity to be in the building in April and May and now into June. And you know, you see, not that it's going to be apparent just by watching a couple mini camp practices, but you want to see how he looks in coverage against Mark Andrews, or if there's a slot receiver that is into his zone over the middle of the field, is he recognizing that? Which, you know, route recognition was something he really struggled with in coverage last year. So to me, you're looking at the young guys, older guys. How do they look? Are they in shape? You know, you don't want a Michael Pierce situation like they had a couple years ago, but. Beyond
where
that,
are they with veterans? Is there, I mean, where's Brandon Williams at this point? I mean, I ran into Jimmy Smith the other night, you know, got me thinking about old guys. Hey, I ran into Jimmy Smith and Jameel McClain within an hour of each other in two different sides of the city.
Super Bowl, yeah.
No, Super Bowl guys, right? Like, and, yeah. You know, like, I think of Jameel as being, like, really old. Not that far off, but, you know, not that far off that he wasn't teammates with guys that are still around and Tucker and, you know, the guys that are still a part of the old Flacco era, but... You know, as far as older players around, we don't ask, like, how are the kickers doing? We don't have how are special teams? We don't ask that around here. But, you know, the 30 plus group on this team, as much as it's Lamar and it's younger guys, there's quite the 30 plus contingent, especially with Zeitler and the right tackle as well. Right.
Well, and I would say, yeah, I mean, you just said it with those two guys. And again, I think it's really tough to take anything all that terribly credible or meaningful away, especially, you know, I'm not Brian Baldinger watching mini camp practice.
First blush with some of the veteran guys as part of this.
How do they look for them? How are they moving? For example, you mentioned Alejandro Villanueva, him working at right tackle. He played very, very little right tackle. I mean, you could count the number of snaps on two hands that he played right tackle in Pittsburgh. He was a left tackle there. And he played left tackle at a high level there for a long time. So it is different. I could vividly remember you and I talking to Marshall Yanda the year his shoulder was messed up and he moved to left guard. Remember, he ended up, they thought he was going to be done for the year and he decided he was going to try to play left guard. And he played left guard at a Pro Bowl level. Speaks to his Hall of Fame career and how great he was. But he even talked about that's tricky in some ways, not that it's exactly the same, but in certain movements, it feels a little bit like if you write right-handed your whole life and suddenly you're writing left-handed, you can probably after a while be able to do it at a capable level where it's legible, but it's certainly not going to be the same penmanship you have as a right-handed writer whatever.
It batting right-handed and left-handed because it's movement, all of it's different. It's, and as much as Orlando Brown had his issues and we talked about, you know, cojones of the Ravens to make moves and deal players and not be afraid to deal players, you know, Orlando Brown's not on the team all of a sudden, right? He's not here.
But to his credit, and this is something I always said about Michael Orr, even though Michael Orr didn't live up to the hype of the blind side, he could play right tackle and then move to left tackle snap to snap if need be. You know, when you remember guys like Gaither and some of the guys they had playing either tackle spot that were injury prone way back when, guys can do that. And I think Villanueva will be able to do it, but it is an adjustment. That's why it has been nice. And I'm not surprised, guy that, you know, most guys that are newcomers, veteran free agents that have signed, they typically, maybe they're not there every day for OTAs, but they're there for most of the time. But he's looked fine so far, as much as you can glean from, again, practicing in shorts for play in the trenches. But you know, you mentioned Brandon Williams. Not that I'm expecting to see anything all that significant this week, unless someone's out of shape. And I'm not saying Brandon specifically, but just generally speaking, I mentioned the Pierce example a couple years ago and how disruptive that was to the start of his training camp, even from a weight and conditioning standpoint. But you do look at this, and this is one reason why I looked at that draft class that they had. And we knew going in that this was not a good defensive tackle draft class. I mean, everyone talked about that. And I think the numbers ultimately would bear that out when you look at the just lack of interior defenders up front that were taken in the first few rounds of the draft. Weren't many. But you look at how the Ravens profile right now. You have Brandon Williams, in it well into his 30s at this point, last year of his contract. Same thing with Calais Campbell. Derek Wolf, they did re-sign. He's under contract beyond this year, but again, other side of 30. Justin Ellis, one of their top reserves, 30 years old. So and he's only signed through this year. So you do have a situation where plenty of talent there still. Have the utmost confidence those guys will still be able to play at a high level in 2021. Is it as good as last year?
All those guys,
sure. No question about it. But there is the reality of you are talking about older football players. And is, you know, a lot of people talked about Calais Campbell last year. I mean, he was banged up, and Calais Campbell had been very durable in the 5 years before that. I always famously said this to you, and probably Joe Flacco was the topic at the time. Durable guys are durable until they're not anymore. And that's just something, you know, it sounds silly, but you think about it. Just because you've been durable your whole career, you do get to a point where the body does start to wear down. So are we going to draw any conclusions from this week on that? No, but I think that's going to be something as we get into the 2021 season. That's why it's so important to see what Justin Madubuike did the second half of last year, where he looked like a guy that, hey, he's probably not going to start this year, but he's going to be a big part of the rotation. And he looks like a guy who can be a starting caliber defensive tackle and maybe be an above average player at that position. You're hoping, you know, whether it's Broderick Washington and his legal issue that he had that, you know, was remedied and, recently it looks like, you know, he'll be available. You know, does he take a step forward to be part of the rotation? Is it one of the rookie free agents that they have, you know, Aaron Crawford, who played in the Pittsburgh pandemic game last year, you know, the COVID outbreak game, and played pretty well. I'd like to see one or two other young defensive linemen emerge as the year goes on. And you're going to have to evaluate Brandon Williams, Calais Campbell, not under contract.
Those lines are kind of old, right?
Well, I mean, I mean, I think even you look at the offensive line. I mean, you mentioned Zeitler and Villanueva.
They're old. They tried young last year.
Sure. Well, right. And that's where you kind of – now you hope Ben Cleveland, who they loved and took in the third round, can he step in and play left guard from day one? You hope so. You know, if it's not him, it's going to have to be Ben Powers or Ben Bredesen or Tyree Phillips maybe. But it's got to be one of those guys. That's kind of the one spot that is in question. But Stanley coming back from the ankle, we're not going to see him this week. You know, I think the hope is he's ready, if not by day one of training camp, you're hoping by, you know, week or two into that, you know, that he has enough time to ramp up for the season. But that'll be a question mark until we see him. Bradley Bozeman playing center to this point, the snaps, I haven't noticed them. It's like an umpire, right? If you haven't noticed him, he's doing a good job, especially this time of year when they're not blocking full speed and full contact. So
the wind's not blowing and the rain's not coming in Buffalo. Right?
I think it's interesting because you mentioned a few minutes ago a name I'm going to bring up. Ryan Jensen, if you recall, became the starting center his contract year and played so well that he played it into a monster contract. I do think it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Bradley Bozeman, not making the assumption that he blossoms into a Pro Bowl center. But even just assuming, hey, he does a rock solid job and you feel comfortable with him, okay, can you get him signed? Can you get him signed at a level that is tenable and palatable to you, knowing that you've already paid Ronnie Stanley a boatload of money? you're going to have to be paying Mark Andrews a boatload of money. You know you're going to be paying Lamar Jackson a boatload of money, whether it's this year or next year. You know it's coming. So he's one of those guys that I think it's going to be interesting. At what level does he play at center? A position that he's familiar with in his college days, but hasn't played there in the NFL, at least in the game setting. So what does he look like? And what does that mean as far as do the Ravens get something done with him for a long-term deal? Wouldn't expect it to be lucrative. I mean, he's been solid, but he hasn't been a Pro Bowl guard. But, you know, what's your value for him? Or does it get to a point where he plays well there and he has designs, much like Ryan Jensen did, of saying, hey, I'm going to go to the market. I was a late round pick. I didn't make much of my rookie deal, which would be totally fair for him to think that way. So you are looking at that. And I think it's interesting you mentioned it because, you know, that it hits you in the face a little more obviously with the defensive line, just seeing so many 30 somethings, but you do look at the offensive line. It is a little bit of an older group. You know, Zeitler did not have a fantastic season last year with the Giants, but he played well, and he's played well for a long time, and he's not so deep into his 30s where you're worried about major drop-off. Is he going to be a Pro Bowl player there? Well, he hasn't been a Pro Bowl player to this point in his career. A lot of that's probably because of Marshall Yanda and playing in the AFC all those years. But, you know, you want him to play at a high level. And Villanueva, you know, your expectations to me, can he be an average starting caliber right tackle? If he can do that, you know, be middle of the pack, if you were ranking the right tackles in football, then that should be more than enough for this team to have an upgraded offensive line from where they were ago.
Maybe even more so than that, given the way they run the ball.
Well, and that's what I mean. I'm saying kind of average in a vacuum, but then when you talk about what the Lamar effect, the effect of just their system, J.K. Dobbins being what I think is a pretty special talent and really looking forward to seeing what he does. He's a guy we haven't talked a whole lot about, but he averaged 6 yards a carry last year.
Well, they gave Gus Edwards all the money last week.
Yeah, they gave Gus Edwards 2 years, $10 million.
I went back with that one. That's
yeah, right,
one.
Right.
Man, I like that. It's good.
But, you know, I mean, and that's what's been funny. I mean, and you and I, we fought about this a little bit. Good-natured fighting, but sparring about it. Yeah, I do think there's an expectation and an emphasis and a priority to improve their passing game. At the same time, we still know what the heart and soul of this offense is. It's the running game center anchored by Lamar Jackson being the greatest rushing quarterback in NFL history. I mean, that's where it starts. And then everything branches off of that, including the passing game. But, you know, I mean, that's still going to be what they do. And I think with the moves they've made with their offensive line, assuming Ronnie Stanley comes back and is Ronnie Stanley, which again, two ankle surgeries. So it's something that I don't think there's a doubt that he'll get back to that point, but is it week one or is it halfway through the season or is it not until 2022, you know, if it's something that lingers and he's dealing with some difficulty with just getting all the way back. So, you know, that, I mean, line play is not exciting. We know that. That's not what people are talking about on ESPN and hot takes and all the different, you know, talking heads talking about those guys. But last year was a great example of how important it was. The Ravens endured the loss of a Hall of Famer to retirement. They lose their all-pro left tackle. We said it at the time. Their Super Bowl hopes really took a major hit the moment that Ronnie Stanley had his ankle bent in and his season was over. And yeah, they made a nice run and they still made the playoffs and it was still a fun second half of the season. But we saw that. And then in the month of November, where they struggled and they lost games and it was looking like things were completely going sideways, their offensive line was banged up at that point. They lost Calais Campbell for multiple games. They lost Brandon Williams for multiple games. And we saw the Tennessee Titans being one of those teams able to run the football on them. So it really is a reminder of how important that is. And it is something that mandatory minicamp's not going to tell us a whole lot. I think that's obvious, but that is, you know, something to look at. And I'd even throw in the pass rush connected to the defensive line just because of the stunts they do, the line games they do. I mean, Derek Wolf had one sack last year, but he's a guy that if you talk to Wink Martindale, their different stunts and blitzes and things that they do, you know, we know how aggressive they like to be, how deceptive they like to be. Derek Wolf's a great setup guy. It's almost like a John Stockton to Carl Malone kind of situation where he does this and no, he's not going to be the guy that hits the quarterback, but he's going to mess with that guy that's supposed to block the edge guy or the blitzer or pick up, you know, whoever the blitzing Mike, whoever it is, and then leads to the sack or leads to the quarterback throwing the ball away or leads to the ball getting knocked up in the air. So, you know, all those all those things are tied together. But, you know, we've spent a lot of time talking about wide receiver in the passing game, but so much of what their success is ultimately going to be in 2021, as it has been the last couple of years, is going to come down to what happens up front on both sides of the ball. And, you know, that's something, you know, that's a long old tale in football that everyone knows, but we need to be reminded of it every now and then.
Run the ball, stop the run. Yeah, that's all we need to do. Luke Jones will be doing all that. He'll be running out to Owings Mills all week. He is Baltimore Luke out on Twitter and Facebook, and I'm out on LinkedIn and Instagram and all those places. We're out at Baltimore Positive. We're getting ready for our crab cake tour and kicking this thing off with some local political types. We're going to be on the road beginning August 1st, the entire month of August, 30 crab cakes in 30 days. I'm working on the itinerary as we speak through the month of June as we get ready for mandatory mini camp. Better show up, Luke. Better hydrate out there, all right?
I will. Looking forward to it.
All right, we'll have a lot of sound here this week as well out at BaltimorePositive.com. Luke and I will be participating in the the Zoom videos of the press conferences. I'm Nestor. We are WNST.net, AM 1570. Keeping it real with our friends at Royal Farms. Chicken Palooza around the corner. We're weeks away. They've told me I'm going to get the new shirts this week, so I'm looking forward to that. We'll see how that goes. Big shout out to our friends at Royal Farms. Real fresh, real fast. We'll all be gassing up for the crab cake tour here at BaltimorePositive.com.